Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and an illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 29.
Say it with such pep.
I know.
Life.
Freaking exciting.
It is exciting. I feel like I'm dying, though.
Oh, well, don't die.
Oh, okay. I was going to die until you told me that.
No, don't die. We need to record this episode first, and then don't die after that either.
Oh, okay.
Continue not to die.
I was worried that you were
don't die because
like,
we need to
go die.
I'm expecting this is in my 5-year plan, so okay. I need you to stay alive
for 5 years.
Exactly. At least
after
five.
After that, I can fuck off.
No, I may re-up you for another 5 after that.
Ah, we'll renegotiate our contract. I see.
Exactly, your life contract.
I have to ask, will the executives at Powerade Zero be involved in this negotiation?
Probably. I'm not going to say they're not going to be our sponsor then, because they may not be. But
well, at that point, we'll be old friends, so we'll just invite them.
Yeah,
just
they'll
be like, why don't you just come? We're gonna have a negosh.
And now that Eric mentions it. We are brought to you by the lovely, amazing flavor of Powerade Zero.
Elevated flavor. Totally
no,
not brought to you by Powerade Zero. That's
no
a secret.
No calories.
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
Get
no
them,
money. No, get, no money for us from Powerade
get
Zero.
Get them electrolytes.
Yes. It's what plants crave.
Get them.
Get so many electrolytes.
In purple.
Purple flavored.
Purple electrolytes.
Mm-hmm. Purple
tasty.
Lights.
Purple lights or pink lights.
Mm-hmm. Pink lights.
There's blue ones.
Blue lights. I don't
blue
know.
Blue light.
No, they're it's azolites. It's azul. It's Spanish.
Ooh.
It's yeah. It gets a little bit fancier with blue azolites.
Me gusta.
Mm-hmm.
Mucho gusta.
Oh yes, I'm so impressed.
Ni ustedes la biblioteca.
Let's rap. Yeah, Childish Gambino up in here.
We need to download our Cat Academy. Cat Academy, learn some Spanish.
I forgot I sent you that.
Yes.
That shit just has your name all over it.
I'm thinking about studying Spanish with the power of cats.
The power of cats, yes. Do you want to explain what you're talking about? I understand.
There's a iOS app called Cat Academy, and there's one out now. There's only one version of it now. It's for Spanish, and basically it teaches you a foreign language with the power of cat memes.
Yes.
And it'll, like, give you Spanish words and, you know, phrases and stuff and key them in with cat pictures. So, I'm already looking at cat pictures online all the time.
Yeah, you might as well better yourself. Yeah,
70 to 80% of the time, probably, mm-hmm. on the internet is spent looking at cat pictures. I might as well just knock out a foreign language while I'm, you know, doing it.
Clearly, you can better yourself. And
it's only $1. Cat Academy Spanish, only $1. And imagine they'll be adding other languages if it's successful enough.
So throw your dollar bills at cats.
Yes, they need to go through college, just mm-hmm. like the rest of us. They have student loans. Cat student loans.
Yes. But it's kind of like dog years. that, like, you know, they owe like 1/7 as much as normal people do.
That's true, but the interest accrues much faster.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's a yearly thing, but it's
so cat
more
interest,
years.
Cat interest, is it 7 times? The period is 7 times as much?
It's, well, 7 is dogs. Cats are different, but
What's the coefficient for that?
It's like 4 million or something.
Wow, cats are ancient.
They are old souls.
A year is
for
4 million years for a cat. That's
it
kind
is.
Of incredible.
Well, now you know why they're so testy all the time.
I guess so.
Because they've lived 4 million years at least in the span of one of our years.
So you're telling me that cats are time lords?
Not quite. They're not as annoying.
They're not as annoying
as time lords. I'm sorry,
bold words for a man that loves cats.
I'm sorry. I've been overloaded with Doctor Who on Tumblr. I don't need any more of that
well,
bullshit.
It was an anniversary, so...
Fuck their anniversary.
When you can have the 50th anniversary of anything, Robbie...
My cat has had like 1,000 50 years anniversaries, so...
I don't think that's actually true. I'm pretty sure you were lying to me earlier.
No, I said it. Therefore,
of course.
Truth?
Yes.
Truth.
Therefore, truth with a question mark. So, hi.
Hello.
How you doing?
We're going to jump into checking in now that we've done enough dicking around.
That was some choice dicking around.
I think it was.
I think we're going to have to make dicking around the first segment.
I think it's already the first segment all the time. I mean, we don't have to.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's understood.
Yes.
10 minutes of us being idiots.
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually start talking about things that we're supposed to.
Yes.
So, checking in, Eric, what have you done this week?
My life is so sad.
No, it's not.
Actually, I'm really excited about what I've done, but when I tell you about it, you will shake your head and say, your life is so sad.
I'm not sure about that.
Do you remember the computer that I basically turned into a DOS machine?
Yes, I remember you mentioning it.
Well, I got a wild hair up my ass, formatted it, and put a real command line interface operating system on it, which is Ubuntu Server. It's a kind of Linux.
Mm-hmm.
And right. I've been goofing around and building a file server for days, and this is terribly exciting for me.
What is your end goal?
To file server. Come on.
I thought that was like a means. I thought that was going to be a means to an end.
It pretty much is just me getting excited about dicking around with computers and then dicking around with computers for hours and hours, which it has been hours and hours. I have spent so much friggin' time working on this thing, and it's... I don't know why this is so fun. It just is. Like, I don't know, like, why figuring out, like, port forwarding and, you know, why I can't, like, SSH into the machine and installing all this shit. I don't know, like, why this has been such fun, but it has. And now I can shut the machine down with my phone.
Well, I can't do that with my computer.
No, you can't.
So you win.
I guess so.
You win.
I win saddest life.
It's not, there's people with sadder lives than that.
I actually am trying to, I actually want to build a Linux RAID server for work. And I'm trying to learn how to do these things just because it interests me. But,
well,
yeah.
It's useful knowledge.
I think so.
It has utility.
Mm-hmm. That, and it's kind of cool to, you know, do a command line only operating system and operate it, like, through the internet. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's right over my head.
Well, you know what?
I know I understood all those things and what they mean, but the actual like doing it.
Yeah, no, it's
that's nothing I can.
I mean, I couldn't. Like, I don't think like you could. Like, I don't know how people could do Linux at all before they could Google shit. Like, I don't think it was possible.
I don't know.
Like, I seriously am just dying to know, like, how people had that much shit in their head. Although, I guess the internet is full of people that have that much shit in their head, so
whatever. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of insane.
It's staggering. Who are these people?
Anyway.
All this knowledge.
All this knowing shit. Don't they know they can just Google it?
I know. That's what I do.
Totally.
Totes.
Totes.
Totes Google.
Yep. So, what server applications did you install over the weekend?
I actually, surprisingly, did not install any.
Okay, that's so unlike you.
I know. Surprising. I do have a few other things to report in with.
Oh, cool.
I mean, they're not server applications.
That's to their detriment, but that's okay. We'll look past it.
The first one is a video game.
It's
crazy.
It's a kind of application.
It is a kind of application. It is the relatively recently released Marvel Lego game.
Ooh.
Yes. Lego, if I don't, I mean, Lego's been making games for a while now. They started with Star Wars, and they've gone through about 10 different franchises, I think, at this point.
The interesting thing about all these Lego games is they're better than just the regular franchise games, like, by scores.
They generally are. They did Star Wars, they did Batman, and then DC.
Mm-hmm.
Then they've done Indiana Jones, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter.
Yep.
I'm sure I'm forgetting. I think they just made it a Lego universe game that's kind of like an MMO to a certain extent.
That's kind of amazing.
But this is the Marvel game, and it is part and parcel with the Lego games. You control superheroes, and they go through little levels. They have cutesy little plot, you know, vignettes in between. They, you know, have like all the caricatures of all their Marvel guys, and they make little funny jokes, which are cute and funny. And you go around, you destroy shit, you build new stuff, use all the heroes' superpowers. You know, some of them only work sometimes. You have to collect, like, everything on Earth. You need to collect 10 bits of this for this level, and then another bit, and then this bit, and then collect everything, and then put it all together, and you get another bit that you can collect all of them if you do all the bits and all the other levels. But, I mean, the story missions are fun and all. But the most of the gameplay is really, like, they have a full Manhattan that you can just tool around in as one of, like, 200 superheroes. And unlocking more as you go. Like, you can, like, across the entire island, they have all the normal New York skyline stuff, plus all the Marvel stuff that in the Marvel universe has, you know, like the Stark Tower and the Shield helicarrier and Hank Pym's office, and they have Marvel HQ but you can, I mean, that's most of the fun. And if you would have guessed, what was the first character after I beat the story missions? What is the first character you think I hunted down and unlocked, Eric?
Oh, Black Bolt?
You're correct.
That did not take me long to guess that.
No, it wasn't. I hunted him down, unlocked him, and then I was flying across Manhattan as Black Bolt, screaming.
Screaming.
And just destroying, exploding cars.
Yeah.
It's scary. You can't kill people, unfortunately.
You need to invent your own version of Hot Dogs Alfred.
Hot Dogs.
Do you remember?
Yes, I remember
Hot
that.
Dogs. Should I share?
You should.
I should share the story of Hot Dogs Alfred. Okay.
Yes, it's a good story.
A good friend of mine. He's got like a niece, and a nephew. One is, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 years old, and the other one's like 4 or 5. And they play the DC Lego game. I think the Batman Lego game. And he says the his favorite thing about the way they play is they invent little meta games inside the game. His favorite of which to watch was called Hot Dogs Alfred. And I'm just laughing just thinking about it. These are just kids that made this up. That's the best thing to think about. That one of them picks Alfred and the other one picks Bruce Wayne. And they're playing in like a co-op mode or whatever it is. I'm not familiar with the game at all. And they just figure out some point in the map that they just decide that's the point where the hot dogs are. And the one that's Alfred says, "Your hot dogs are ready, sir." And then at that point, Bruce Wayne runs up to Alfred from all the way across the map and beats him to death. And then they do it again.
Hot dogs, Alfred.
Oh, hot dogs, Alfred. I love it.
That's the beauty of these games is that they're just like you can do anything.
Yes.
I mean you can just I was just the Hulk. I jump around and just destroy cars or you can actually switch there's obviously unlockable alternate costumes for all the heroes as well. Mm-hmm. Like after you unlock them all, you also have to unlock all their costumes. And it's just
Have to.
If it was any other Lego game, I probably wouldn't, but it's Marvel Lego, so yes, I need the fifth alternate costume for Spider-Man.
That's what I'm saying. I clearly heard you say have to.
And it's just zooming around like as Iron Man and like going into like turbo mode, and I'm really looking forward when I unlock Silver Surfer. It's going to be a blast. I get to surf across Manhattan. Going warp speed, shooting power cosmic at things.
Yes.
So, if you are a Lego game fan and you love Marvel like I do, it is a I can't believe I even like once thought that I shouldn't buy it. Because it's
what platform did you get it for?
I got it for Xbox for 360, but it's out for PS3, 360. I believe it's out for PC, and I'm not sure about the new consoles. I heard about it being delayed for the Xbox One, the Xbone, but I don't know about the PS4. I'm not planning on owning them anytime soon, so I'm not really keeping too close a track.
Yeah, I can totally buy Lego Marvel Super Heroes.
It's pretty awesome. My other check-in is pretty awesome as well. One of the best experiences I've had meeting a comics creator. We did review Battling Boy a couple weeks ago. Raved about it, as well we should, because it's spectacular. And I just happened to, be checking out Tate's Comics, which are the local comic shop here. And
just happened to be. Like
just
it
happened.
Like it wasn't completely calculated.
No. But they had a signing with Paul Pope, who does Battling Boy, as well as Batman Year 100 and other comics. And I couldn't pass it up. I went there. I was first person in line, and it wasn't as crowded as I thought it would be. With some a guy like who's won a Eisner. I was first in line. I bought a Batman Year 100. He did a Strange Tales, the Marvel Knights Strange Tales. Recently. Mm-hmm. I bought an issue of that. He did the cover and got him signed that. He signed Battling Boy. He signed Batman. He drew a little mini sketch of Battling Boy and Batman in each respective book. He talked to me like for 15 minutes about how hard it was to draw Wolverine, how he talked to John Cassaday, who was doing Astonishing X-Men at the time, how much work he says he really feels the pressure now. Like we were talking about how long we were expecting until the next, story in Battling Boy comes out, which is, I think, the next one's going to be an Aurora West story. But how he's like, yeah, I really got the pressure on me now. I think he said he's got like 20 pages done of the next one.
Not enough. Not enough.
I know. He's like,
did you punch him in the kidneys and take him out of his briefcase? Because you should have.
I didn't do that. He didn't have a briefcase either.
What a bastard.
He was, like, super nice. Like, the nicest guy in the nicest meeting, most lovely man, lovely experience. Like, took time to talk to me about everything. And I mentioned the podcast. He thought it was really cool that we talked about Battling Boy. He was super nice. I could not endorse the signing more than I am. If you ever get the chance to go meet Mr. Pope, take up the chance, because it's definitely worth it.
Yep. Sit in his lap. Tell him what you want for Christmas.
He might allow it.
He might.
He was very friendly. That is it. That's all I got for checking in.
That's some good checking.
That's some good checking.
You want me to talk about Ubuntu server and Hot Dogs Alfred some more?
If you want.
I don't really think it's a good idea.
Okay, then we won't. That's fine. We can move on.
Hot dogs, Alfred!
We're going to go over two weekly floppies. No Hot Dogs, Alfred in weekly floppies. Yet.
It is a damned shame.
It's obviously a possibility. I'm not rolling it out or anything.
Yep.
But we're going to start off with Marvel. The latest chapter of Infinity. We're almost at the end. This is Avengers number 23, written by Jonathan Hickman, of course, art by Lionel Francis Yu, with color by Sonny Goat and Paul Mounts, letters by Corey Pettit. This is seeing everyone coming, all the superheroes coming back to Earth, trying to take on Thanos, get back to through the blockade. It's pretty heavy on the action. Not a lot of... This is not a thinky book. This is more a hitty book. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it all the same.
I could not have talked it better myself.
I am ready, like, to see what happens at the end of this. I'm ready for the big showdown with Thanos. There's only one Infinity book left and one book of New Avengers left in this crossover. And it is coming to a head. And I am ready. I mean, I just saw... Get to see Ronan the Accuser bash in the head, Jesus Christ, of one of Thanos' lieutenants.
Yeah, he pops him like a watermelon, doesn't he?
Yes, Jesus. He judges him. And
the Sledge-O-Matic.
The Sledge-O-Matic. That's right. I don't think Ronan the Accuser is as racist as Gallagher is.
I don't know. Look, he's wearing a hood.
It's green.
You're right.
It's green. It's different.
He's. It's the purity of the Skrulls that he's into. He's not a Skrull, but
Kree.
He's a Kree.
He hates the Skrulls.
They're not green though.
No, they're blue.
Yeah, maybe he's trying to purify the Skrulls. I don't know. I'm just saying words.
Yes, I enjoyed this comic. I'm going to say that.
I enjoyed it too, but you know the way you're saying I'm ready to see the ending.
Mm-hmm.
All I can think is I'm ready for Infinity to be over. It's been. I feel like half of my life has gone into this story.
Half of your entire life?
Entirely.
Wow. I haven't felt like it's been that big a part of my life.
It's been a while.
And there's only one very surreptitious Miranda Shaw in this comic.
Yep. I think Black Widow would get along well with Miranda.
Yeah, that's true. It works better with Black Widow.
Or that, or they'll kill each other. I don't know.
They probably would kill each other. They're similar.
Mm-hmm.
But in the art, it's still great. He's still doing a good job.
He's still Francis Ewing it up.
He is. I mean, like I think I've said this before in other chapters of this.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, at least, when, you know, it's been good the entire time. I mean, it has a lot of good dramatic beats. I really did enjoy. You got a little bit of the insight into the Black Dwarf, the Thanos's the lieutenant guy.
Right.
He gets kind of offended when they call him a villain.
This is the thinky talky part of the book.
It's the two pages before his head explodes. Mm-hmm.
One of the guys, "You've been judged."
Yeah.
They think that's his and new. You, that's his new.
And you have been judged.
That's his catchphrase.
Well, he is an accuser.
Yes,
that's what he does.
You've been accused. He's going to say "j'accuse,"
because he's a French judge.
Oh, is he?
Yeah,
Ronan.
Sure.
Ronan's a French name.
Sure.
Okay.
Because he said "j'accuse."
In this fictional
place.
I understand.
Because he's an accuser. I said "j'accuse." Robbie.
Thank you for explaining it. That makes it much more funny.
Jokes are hilarious when you explain them.
It is. But I'm a buy on this, because I can't not be.
Yes. You're obligated to be like, yeah, you should buy this.
It's good.
Buy the $1,000 of other Infinity books, but don't buy this one. See how it ends.
$1,000.
Don't buy the one where the guy smashes the dude's head open with a hammer.
It's pretty gruesome.
It is pretty grisly. He's like got teeth coming out the back of his neck.
He does.
He totally does. That's gruesome.
Well,
surprisingly gruesome for a Marvel comic.
Don't fuck with Ronan.
Clearly.
That's what happens. That's what happens. Yeah. You get teeth smashed through the back of your neck.
Fucked up. But
everything we've said about all the Infinity books previously stand with this one. It looks very nice. It keeps the action moving. I think we're both ready for it to come to a head, which it is. Only two more issues. But we are both buys on Avengers 23.
Mm-hmm.
We're going next. Daredevil. Number 33. Checking in with the devil. So I saw that there's going to be monsters in this one.
Yep, there are.
It's kind of sad that Mark Waid's run is coming to an end soon. Issue 36 is going to be their last. Because there's not a book is coming out where so reliably is excellent. And Daredevil is certainly been that for almost 3 years now. This book sees Matt Murdock chasing down the leaders of the Serpent Society, who have like an occult book that is supposedly the source of their power, but he gets waylaid by these monsters, and they help each other trying to get to this book with some really excellent sequences. It's great. I every time we read Daredevil, I say, "Oh, this is great," and it still is. Do you share my enthusiasm, Eric?
Not even a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't enjoy this book at all.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I'm just so incredibly uninterested in this. I don't know. It's so incredibly just. I don't know. It's just the sum of all parts don't seem to work for me. I don't even know that I can give too much detail on it. I just think it's not for me.
Really?
I'm
surprised.
I'm trying real hard to articulate it as you would think would be an important thing to do. But it's just something about it just sort of falls flat for me.
I really enjoyed it's even in this run, Daredevil, it's nice to see Mark Waid put Daredevil in kind of like a, I really enjoyed it because it was like different than anything than we've seen through Mark Waid's run in Daredevil. He hasn't gotten really any of this. He stayed kind of out of these monsters, mm-hmm. and like the magic realm of Marvel. He hasn't done much. It's always been, it's more sticking to, you know, fighting Bullseye and the Arcari and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was, and I really thought the test, quote unquote, where, you know, you see these, he has to march through imagined atrocities, racial atrocities, you know, hate crimes throughout, from different time periods, reliving them, even, because he's blind, he makes it through. Any other man, you know, wouldn't, but then he realizes, you know, it's not quite what it seems to be at first, and that, I think, it seemed really, it's like really interesting to me. And do you like the art at all?
I do, and I enjoy the art quite a lot. But I think that pretty much everything you're saying, maybe that's part of it, that Daredevil in this sort of, and they're cheesy, you know, these monsters.
Well, yeah.
It's very incongruous for me. It doesn't fit to where it works for you. It like completely doesn't for me. It's like this weird juxtaposition enhances it for you. I think it kind of ruins it for me. Like not these same characters, but similar characters with the Punisher as Frankencastle, that all worked together. This is just, it's too weird for me. And, like, there's, like, weird, cheesy dialogue, and it just, I don't know. It just isn't what I wanted.
Okay. Can't really argue with it.
Yeah. I just don't think it's for me.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Whenever they do, I need to get the first hardcover of this, of their run, and because I love it. So I'm a buy. Eric is, I'm guessing, a don't buy.
See, I really like the art. I would almost buy it. It's the kind of issue I would almost just buy based on just the art. It's the story, it's just not for me. So I'm a don't buy.
There we go. That's Daredevil number 33. We're jumping over to DC, Detective Comics.
The District of Columbia.
Yep. And we're going to start off with Aminal Man, number 25. Written by Jeff Lemire, art by Raphael Albuquerque, colors by Dave McKeag, and letters by Jared K. Fletcher. And we are seeing pretty much the story continue with Animal Man trying to rescue these Hollywood socialites who've been kidnapped by these acolytes of Brother Blood, and his daughter continuing to get there. She's kind of with all those animal pirates in the red hiding, but then it kind of escalates at the end a little bit and then goes off a crazy direction, which I was not expecting at the very end. But this is still real. I mean, I love it. Animal Man's great. And this is really good. You finally get to see Buddy Baker kind of unleash hell a little bit.
Oh, it's a really fun one. It makes zero sense to me. It's almost like a plot device that she's like, I'm going with you. It's completely senseless that his wife would be like, you're a big superhero, and I'm going to follow you into an incredibly dangerous situation just because.
Well,
it make any sense to me. I mean, that's kind of suspension of disbelief territory.
I was going to say, if it's a mother who is going crazy with grief about her missing daughter, and her husband goes, "Oh, I'm gonna go search for it. You stay here." You know, she's been missing for a while now. I would think, you know, I'm tired of being on the sidelines. I want to know what's happening.
I get that, but it's like,
and they had that big unification moment at the end of the last issue. So it's, you know, that big spread where they're finally, you know, they hug and make up.
No, and I get that, but like the very next panel that they're in together, he's fucking flying.
Yeah.
It's like, what in the hell is she going to do?
Provide moral support.
I don't know. I, I guess it's senseless. You know, there's
well, there, it's not always. I don't think is his first question always going to be tactics, and strategy, like or who is more. Are you useful to me? Then if you are not, then you may not come with me.
Mm. Just figure it's a life or death situation. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to.
Well, I mean, he could maybe better protect her if she's with him. Mm. I mean, I don't think they're constrained to. I don't think if she's by herself, I don't necessarily think she's any safer.
I don't know that it's. I don't know that it's worth debating. It's just something I want to bring up.
I did not even think about it until you just said it.
Well, you just didn't think about it because it's kind of a trope that she's like, I'm going to.
Yeah, and she does prove herself useful.
I don't think she couldn't find a flower pot to crack over someone's head.
Not a flower pot, but a best actor statue.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. Her being inserted. She kicks the guy in the nuts, too. It's just like.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Tropey, it's tropey, but in a good way. It's like that nice, warm, tropey feeling to me.
It's a low point. And otherwise, a very good issue for me. It certainly doesn't ruin it. Because obviously the story is really cool, and this is really gorgeous art. Like it all, like the color and the brushwork is just excellent. It's really beautiful. This is Albuquerque again, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it's and there's no obtrusive signatures.
He did it on the cover though.
That's a cover. You're more expected to do it on a cover.
I think a little bit more so, but I just do think it's a little. I don't know. It's arrogant.
Oh wait! I found one. Never mind.
Oh, where? Where? What page?
Four. The fourth page in the bottom left corner.
Yep, I can see it from the thumbnail. I can see it from space.
But
what a son of a bitch!
this terrific artist. He's a bastard for signing. It's just a little. Just distracts from it a little bit.
Yeah.
But still, the comic is very good. The story.
You don't want to detract from it at all.
That's true. But the overlays of him channeling these different animals, it's really cool. But the ending is a little twisty.
Mm-hmm.
I was not expecting that.
Not what I was expecting. Yeah.
Just suddenly, boop, Cthulhu monsters, ancient horrors in outer space.
Yeah, well, I mean, why not?
Why not? I wonder if he can, like, channel those monster animals, too. Or is he limited to the Earth animals?
I don't know. I guess it depends on... I don't know how the Red works.
Yeah.
They're, like, not a part of it.
They probably, yeah. That's probably how it works.
If their crazy space magic isn't a part of it.
Yeah, they're probably not. But I'm interested to see what happens.
That monster is like speaking in like wingdings.
It is.
It's not even like that one thing is the like cancer symbol.
One of them is a 69.
That's the one I'm talking about. That's the symbol for cancer.
Oh, like I'm a cancer.
Like the astrological sign. Yes, you are.
Wink, wink.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, aside from those couple of small caveats we've discussed.
Yeah.
Animal Man is still very good.
It's a buy, even for me.
Yes,
by the way, Robbie.
Buy.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Robbie,
yes.
Let me take this moment to wish you a happy Batsgiving.
Yeah, that's really stupid.
It's about as stupid as it gets. I love how Marmaduke is in the picture.
It's Bat Dog. It's Ace.
It's Marmaduke, damn it.
It's Ace. He has a name. It's Ace. He was, even when after Damien died, he was like all sad, and, you know. Where's Damien?
A giant pile of human bones.
That, yes, it is. That disturbed me when I saw that. I'm like, oh, that's a lovely Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I know. We were talking,
in the back of every DC book this week, there was a Happy Batsgiving double page spread for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Thanksgiving isn't until the next week. I mean, there's going to be another Wednesday prior to this. I mean, the next Wednesday is the one before Thanksgiving. You would think they would wait. But whatever. It's stupid regardless.
They needed to show Cannibal Batman.
I guess. Maybe Bat Dog has discovered the taste of human flesh.
I guess so. Human flesh is delicious, I've heard.
Tastes like pig.
Just dead silence.
I won't disclose how I know that.
The internet, the long, clearly.
Long pig, they call it.
I'm on a lot of German message boards.
Our second DC book of the week is Green Lantern New Guardians number 25, written by Justin Jordan with Brad Walker and Geraldo Borges on art. And then we have Drew Hennessy and Cam Smith as inkers. And then we have Will Quintana as the colorist and Dave Sharp as the letterers. Aside from a little bit of like weird exposition in this, I was really interested in this story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a good time reading it. I don't know. Every exposure I have to the Lanterns, I have a good time reading. I just think it's more my kind of story. I mean, they're like magic space gods, you know?
Yeah, basically.
So, I mean,
fun space adventures.
It's always like big and over the top, and at the same time, like, it's surprisingly, I don't know, it's not trying to make itself like too gritty necessarily. It doesn't take itself terribly seriously, but it still manages to tell a pretty serious story.
When the hook came for this story, it got me.
Absolutely. It would be a terrible spoiler to go into it, but there's some real heart to it.
Yeah, they come across this planet that is, by all intents and purposes, a utopia, and he is trying to discover if there's something, if they're hiding something, and they are hiding something. But what exactly they're hiding is something I wasn't expecting, and it's quite interesting. And really, it has some interesting possibilities for how the story's going to go. And I enjoyed the art. It's not, you know, it's comic booky but good. Not Jim Lee. Like, there's not like a preposterous amount of Jim Lee influence in this one. It just looks like a,
I'd call it a pretty superior in terms of comic booky art.
Yes, exactly.
I think it's, I don't know, just very, very good. I like it quite a lot.
Yeah, I think the facial expressions are really solid. I love the little playful aliens. And again, the only problem I have with it is a little bit of clunky dialogue in the beginning that is like wrapping up the last story that we weren't. This is the first issue in a new arc, and the last story, they're obviously some loose ends, and they had to tie them up before it continued. Which I don't understand why DC just not institute. I'll say it again. Just a recap page. You have a recap page anyway in this, basically. Like, between two characters, dialoguing back and forth about how they feel. Like, you could have cut that down to one page and a recap page, and it would accomplish the same thing. I don't know. They say it cuts down, DC doesn't cut costs. You know, it's one less page they have to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives them one more page of story. But sometimes it seems like they're just doing the same thing they would have been doing.
Yeah. This actually cuts out story because they're spending that page doing a recap page in story, and it just makes it hammy.
Exactly.
It's what you're saying.
Yeah, like, it's not natural. People talking, like, for, you know, you see all, you know, like, a page covered in speech bubbles.
Yes.
Which can be hammy, yes.
Yeah.
Especially when it's, like, obviously trying to catch people up on what happened while communicating how characters feel. But, I mean, after the first two pages, it's over and done with, and you're on to the story, which, again, good hook. I might be picking this up next time, just to see where it goes.
I'm pretty stoked about it.
But Eric, I would like to take this opportunity.
Oh?
To wish you a happy Batsgiving.
Oh, that's so sweet of you.
I know.
I'm trying to flip back to Batsgiving.
Yeah.
So there it is.
The human bones. Why? Yes. I don't understand.
I did not notice it the first couple times I looked at it, and it's pretty creepy.
Yeah, there's just a spine and some skulls and some rib cages.
Who's the creepy pig face guy in the back?
That's from the Court of Owls, I believe.
The what?
Court of Owls. It was when Morrison was writing Batman. It was the villains he introduced. They all were animal faces.
I mean, naturally.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, there's a lot of people who love Morrison's Batman run. I'm kind of meh on it, honestly. I don't think he wrote Bruce Wayne very well, but...
Well, I will say that everything of it I read was absolute shit. This is coming from someone that's a pretty big fan of Grant Morrison.
Yeah, but we're off topic. Green Lantern, New Guardians, 25... Great, really good, solid space kind of sci-fi hook. I'm a buy.
I'm a buy as well. I'm not a buy on Batsgiving.
No, we are both selling Batsgiving. Giving it away, throwing it out the window.
Yep.
If possible.
There were tooth marks on the bones.
Really?
No, I just wanted to say that. You can't okay. tell. It's a drawing.
So you can draw that in.
Yeah, but it just looks like little marks.
Okay, I can't tell.
It's a tooth mark.
Okay. I didn't know if you were being serious or not. I didn't really check. So that's it for DC. We're going to go to our indie book of the week, and it is Buzzkill, number 3.
You know what?
Open up your Dark Horse app.
I was going to say, you know what time it is.
It's
shitty application time.
God, Dark Horse, come on. Just jump over to Comixology. They're half so much better than yours. I'm sorry, it is.
Yeah. Dude, it's worse. You have, like, the fancy schmancy, like, semi-new iPad.
Yeah, that's true. I can't imagine how bad it is on an older one.
I'm running this Dark Horse app on, like, one of the tablets that Moses brought down from the mountain. It's not good. It doesn't even run it, like, it literally will not run the newer iOSs. Like, I'm running Jesus. An old I am running the most up to date iOS, and it is an old one.
So this is Buzzkill number 3, plot by Donny Cates and Mark Resnick, script by Donny Cates, art by Jeff Shaw, colors by Lauren Affey. Doesn't say who lettered it, but regardless, this is continuing. This is we're finally seeing what's his face. I can't think of his name.
I think maybe his middle name is what's his face.
But we see Mr. Buzzkill encounter his kind of superhero team, mm-hmm. and try and make amends with them. Before he goes to see his ex-girlfriend with Dr. Black with a Q.
Mm-hmm.
And then some shit hits the fan. Some really serious shit. But again, this is my book of the week. It's great. I love this story. Mm. It's really interesting what they're doing with it. And I was quite surprised by the end. the little twist. It almost hit a little, like a two tread, like story pattern to me, but it, the overall quality of the book pulled it over to the side of interesting.
Explain what you mean.
I mean, it's this, okay. This is spoilery.
Well, I'm not even familiar with the term, so you know, however you want to go about this.
I'm just saying, like this is a spoilery. If you haven't read this book yet, mm-hmm. you're going to skip ahead 5 minutes or something. So they reveal on the last page that the guy who was in the hospital in previous issues that in this incident that spurred him to get sober was a super terrible ultra villain who's killed thousands and thousands of people, and it is actually the guy's father. And that twist of the big bad villain is your father, you know, has been done once or twice before, but I wasn't expecting it. I call it a good twist, and the overall quality of the book makes me want to, you know, makes me interested.
Were you expecting his dad to be Lex Luger?
No, I was not, actually. He's going to put him in a torture rack. But, that's kind of a, like you said about, like, an Animal Man about his wife following him around.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like a thing where, like, you know, the villain that we don't, who is this person in the hospital? It's been kind of in the last book, it was kind of brought up. And, you know, then you get, and there is a little foreshadowing when the dickhead leader of the group, of his old superhero team, you know.
Yeah, you're like your father.
Yeah. So there's a little foreshadowing here. And that, along with just how good this book is, how good the dialogue is, and how interesting the characters are.
Can I be perfectly honest? And I didn't enjoy this one as much as the other two.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think it was bad, but I thought it was weaker. I mean, I'm enjoying it more just sort of flipping through it and remembering these moments. Like, I think I might need to read it a couple more times. And I think it merits that. But I don't know. I thought the first two were incredibly amazing, and this one's kind of just good.
I really liked it. I really liked the little, I like, you get a little bit background on all the superheroes.
Yeah.
They have a little bit of, you get Discharge, who no one will call him Discharge because the name's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's something called a Panterodactyl.
Yes.
And he's like, that Panterodactyl is my real name.
I mean, why wouldn't it be?
Yeah, I know. When you are a Panterodactyl, and you get, you know, the characters seem true. They feel true to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the encounter with his ex-girlfriend, and, you know, the reveal afterwards, and then the big thing at the end, and I am anxious. Now, there's only one more issue left in this. I am quite anxious to see what happens.
I think maybe that's why I'm a little let down by this, is because it feels, I don't know, not as big and epic and amazing to me. And because there's only four books, that kind of makes it feel a little, I don't know, more severe. It's hard to say. It's still good. It's still very good. And I can't wait to read the next one, but I'm not as high on it as you are. It's still very, very good, though.
And the art is great.
It's actually really tough for me to say the art this week that I think is the best, because there's a lot of very strong, very beautiful art this week. There's no real weak points in any of the books, and this has consistently been one of the strongest books in terms of art.
Yeah, really effectively communicates, like, feeling, action.
Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. The I don't know, just the energy of the drawing and the line work, and the colorist is really pulling it together. I don't know, it's truly excellent. It's such a good book.
Yeah, I this is Buzzkill number 3. I am a buy, super buy. If you haven't read, if you've been reading the series, read all of them. And fourth one is coming out right before Christmas. Should be an excellent Christmas present.
Yep, it's coming out before Christmas. This one came out before Batsgiving.
That's true. It came out before Batsgiving.
Right before Batsgiving.
But, so, you're a buy as well, Eric.
Yes, I am a slightly less enthusiastic buy than Roboito is, but it is still a very worthy book.
Yeah, it's really good. I was not knowing what to expect when we started reading this. It's one of my, every time it comes out, I look forward to it. And, that is it for Weekly Floppies. Wah, wah. Sad noises.
That was a sad noise?
That was a sad noise. Exactly.
I feel like I've done that before.
You probably have.
Show.
It's possible.
Yeah.
We do make silly noises a lot.
I guess so.
And we're going to jump over to Nerd Boy Book Club. And this week we are starting our journey through the entirety of The Sandman. Starting off with volumes 1 and 2. I believe the first one is titled Preludes and Nocturnes. The second one is A Doll's House.
The Doll's House.
The Doll's House.
Is what mine says.
Okay. So, Eric, this is you. You're always bringing up Sandman.
It's pretty important in, the pantheon of comic book characters.
It is.
It's one of the series that has made comics more legitimate, and it's the series, at least in my life, that made me pick up comics again, start reading comics. When I was like a teenager, I just got so turned off. I thought they were stupid. You know, it's kids stuff or whatever. And yeah. I started reading manga. Because it had boobies in it. And it made me feel more grown up or something. I don't know. But I don't know. Maybe when I was about 20. My mom actually bought it for me at a Goodwill.
Really?
Yeah. Not thinking like, oh, this is a really good comic. My son will love it. Like, she was thinking, this is a comic. My son will love it. Like, having no idea what it was. But it was the fourth book of The Sandman. And I originally didn't want to read it. I thought it looked stupid as hell. And I thought the art was hideous. I finally read it and was completely blown away. Still stands as one of the best things I've ever read.
When was the last time you've read this before this
week? It has probably been... I actually don't know. It has been at least 3 years, I would say.
Well, revisiting it, how does it hold up, the first two books?
Well, it pretty much is... It pretty much is laying where I expected it to be.
I know you described the first book as not good, or not as good, nearly as good as the later books are.
Yeah, it's... I feel like my feelings are the same. If anything, the books have improved, you know, with another read. And I'm seeing them more for what they are. I mean, A Doll's House I enjoyed probably more than ever. Like, the story feels a lot more real and more vivid. I felt a lot more connected to it, you know, as I'm going through it. Same thing with Preludes and Nocturnes. I felt like I was, you know, a little more connected with what Gaiman was doing. And, you know, I'm thinking about, like, what he's going through at that period of his life. He was a young guy when he wrote that. I don't know how old he was, but what's his name? Not Sam. The artist that did all the covers. I can't think of his stupid name.
Mike Dringenberg?
No, it's not Mike Dringenberg. It's Dave McKean.
Oh, okay.
Dave McKean is kind of a rock star artist in and outside of the comic book world. I had an illustration professor that was obsessed with Dave McKean. And it's people like him and Gaiman that have just, I don't know, they've made it legitimate with stuff like this. Anyway, I was saying Dave McKean was 22 when they started doing work in comics together. 20 friggin' two.
It's pretty young.
It's ridiculous how young that is. That's crazy. But Gaiman sort of didn't know what he was doing when he was writing Preludes and Nocturnes. Like, he pitched it as a horror book, and it was supposed to be very Lovecraftian, you know, and it sort of starts out that way. And it's pretty quickly becomes obvious that that's not really a great direction.
No, that's you know, reading the first couple issues, it feels like old EC Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And then it shifts tonally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with Sam Keith's artwork. When Dringenberg takes over, he's much better suited to draw the Sandman. Sam Keith sucks. I'm sorry. I hate his artwork. I hate those goofy, mushy people that he draws. I mean, and it is very EC. God, it's such an EC story, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But I mean, Gaiman pulls on so much, so many just varied, weird, and different kinds of influence. Almost all the characters that are in The Dreaming,
mm-hmm.
like I think Lucien and Cain and Abel, and maybe even Eve. You don't know Eve, but Lucien and Cain and Abel are in this book.
Mm-hmm.
They all had their own DC titles.
Yeah, I was. I mean, reading this, you see a lot of different. I mean, he goes to Arkham Asylum. Mm-hmm. You get Constantine. It's also another Vertigo DC character at that time. You know, you get all these different characters that are kind of floating around. Even mentions I know Martian Manhunter is alluded to as well.
Yeah, he's in there. He's in his bathrobe or his his nightgown. Yes. Whatever, his smoking jacket, whatever the shit it is.
In Mars, they have different rules about clothing.
They do. They do. And on Mars, Morpheus is a flaming head.
Yes.
I actually think that's probably my favorite moment in this whole book, where he sees Martian Manhunter. And that's one of my favorite recurring themes, is how people experience dream in their own way.
Yeah.
You know, like when Nada sees him in book two, mm-hmm. he's a black man, and he is a flaming alien head when Martian Manhunter sees him. And there's places later on where there's like a two or three people, and they all speak different languages, like they're as a first language.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just talking to them, and one of them's like, oh, I hear them speaking English. And the next person is like, I hear them speaking Greek. And I always thought that was a pretty fascinating concept. that everyone just experiences them in their own way. It's just one of the interesting and conceptual things about the Endless.
Yeah, I mean, between the two volumes, you've told me before, and others, you know, while I've been present, you know, that the first volume is not as good, and you can't really take it as a measure of quality.
No.
Of the thing as the works as a whole, you know. But I mean, it's clearly laying a lot of foundation.
Yeah.
A lot of story and background about the Endless.
Yeah.
And relationships and all that stuff, and as well as, I mean, a lot of it is kind of, I don't know, you could not necessarily need it, but it does fill in a lot of, and he does, I already can see that he's setting up things for even further storylines. But yeah, I mean, Volume 2 is clearly better than Volume 1, just because it has, you know, most of it is a singular story, not, you know, five different stories told, you know, one at a time with vaguely, you know, loose connection points.
I don't think it didn't really start to click for him until, you know, the end of Book 1. Then everything started to really fall into place, I should say. And they always point out that one story with Morpheus feeding the pigeons, and you meet his sister for the first time.
Yeah.
They point that out as sort of the crucial turning point, and everyone sort of heralded it as the Sandman has finally found its voice. That's what his editor has always called that issue.
Yeah, it seemed, because again, this is when, you know, we say Volume 1 and 2, this is, the other thing that stood out to me is, you know, when we think of a comic book arc, mm-hmm. nowadays, it's, you know, 5 issues.
Yeah.
Maybe 6 issues.
Mm-hmm.
These are both, I mean, Doll's House, they're both like 8-issue collections.
Are they?
I think so, yeah. I mean, that's 16 issues total between the two volumes. And the one where you meet, he's feeding the pigeons, that's issue number 8.
Hmm.
So it separates, you know, the preludes and nocturnes from the Doll's House. But, I mean, it's big chunks of story.
Mm-hmm.
These are not short arcs. They're much more extensive. Which, I mean, he's delivering a pretty large amount of information in them. So it's certainly not a waste of... It doesn't feel like it's too much, or it's, you know, not too much... Too many issues for not enough story.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually relatively compressed.
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
Considering, I mean, nowadays a lot of comics readers are more used to, like, the decompressed storytelling.
Yes.
Where, like, half the story is superheroes getting a cup of coffee. Half of an issue or whatever. And this is not really like that at all. It's relatively compressed, even for the amount of ground he's covering. I guess you should briefly discuss the... I mean, Sandman's kind of ubiquitous almost at this point, even mm-hmm. to people who haven't read it. But it plot-wise, or a basic synopsis, is, you know, you're Morpheus, the Endless, the Lord of Dreams, you want to call him that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's captured at the beginning, and you see him escape, and then it's kind of, even if there are overarching stories, a lot of these, even issues inside of them, are covering only one character, or one side character, or multiple side characters, you know, how they interact with each other. It's not necessarily, you know, it's not necessarily just every issue is Morpheus and what's happening to him.
I think that I'm not exactly sure when it shifted to that, but I've always thought that the Sandman stories were sort of Neil Gaiman trying to write his own Doctor Who stories.
Right.
Because he's always been obsessed with the character of the Doctor, and there's a lot of similarity between, you know, the Doctor and Morpheus. At least, you know, he can do, like, little tricks like open doors, which the Doctor always does. And, you know, he's often, like, a a similar kind of character in that he's in the story. He's an element in the story. But oftentimes, it's about someone that kind of revolves around him. In the case of Rose Tyler, not Rose Tyler. Name, what is it? Rose Walker. Yes. See, there you go. They both know roses. QED.
I guess it's appropriate considering the anniversary.
So you could just be angry.
I'm not angry. I'm just, tired.
I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed. I'm
tired of it. Of the endless discussions about which doctor, this doctor and that doctor and the numbers.
Well, Dream of the Endless is my favorite doctor.
He is, you're right, he is like in the story, but not of the story.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, there are stories where he is a more of the main focus.
Right.
But that's maybe only half of the Sandman. So much of it is stories like about Rose, or I don't know what else is going on. It's not entirely like this first book where it's like him going on this quest to get his crap back.
Yeah,
which is, I mean, it's one of the least interesting stories in the whole collection.
Yeah, I kind of like the one where he went to hell, but
oh yeah, that's. I don't know. There's a lot of fun ideas, and it's not all completely lacking in merit, but...
But all the... I mean, the rest of it is kind of just...
Yeah.
You... I mean, one issue devoted to each of these items, and then, it's just fairly, mm-hmm. rote. I mean, he's getting them back. It's just kind of like, oh, the devil... The one where he went to hell was interesting just because of the execution, mm-hmm. and showing hell and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the second story, which is concerning this vortex, the Rose character, and their interactions with a serial killer convention.
Yeah, there's a lot of fascinating stuff in this book, and how they get involved in this serial killer convention.
Yeah,
and they're like they try and dance around, like they're trying to hide the fact. Hide in plain sight that they're all serial killers. Did you catch the what in the hell is it called? The little Nemo references when Jed's asleep?
No. Us? No.
Yeah, that's all the comics are done in the style of Little Nemo comics, another famous comic strip about dreams. And a dreamland.
Makes sense.
It's pretty apt, and I'm sure that's not something the artist invented. That was completely Gaiman's creation there, that had to be the Little Nemo reference.
Yeah.
The other thing that's pretty fascinating, and I might have even showed you this book, is it's on my wall. It's a Jack Kirby book.
Yeah.
But
the Sandman.
Yeah, that's who Brute and Glob and the Sandman are.
Yeah, I realized that after. I was like, wait a second, that's where he's pulling that in there.
Exactly. And that's just the kind of weird comic book minutia that Neil Gaiman knows. There's a story that I really want to tell about what an insane-mo Neil Gaiman is.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of want to save it for when we actually talk about the story, because I think it would be... are we going to do the next two books next week?
Sure.
Okay, I'm down with that. So then next week we'll be talking about this story.
Okay.
Do you want to hear the story now, or do you want to...
We can do it next week.
Okay, then I will save it. But we'll just let it be known that Neil Gaiman is one of the biggest comic book nerds on the planet.
Yeah, I don't... When do you want to have a discussion about Neil Gaiman himself?
I don't know.
Save that till the end.
I don't know. Anytime you're ready. I think he's a fascinating
I bring it up because Megan and Yusef were visiting us, and the fact that we were reading Sandman 1 and 2 came up.
And Yusef flipped out, flipped the table over, broke your window.
No, he just
set your house on fire.
Let his position be known, and I was a little bit more sympathetic with him because the Neil Gaiman and Amanda Palmer AMA was on Reddit this week,
right?
And afterwards, of course, every nerd on the internet was praising them. Oh my God, they're so funny and such a modern couple, and
yeah.
But there's two artists perfectly fit together, blah, 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 and they rise above all the criticism, and...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I've ever read something by Neil Gaiman that I didn't enjoy to some extent.
Right.
But his cult of personality bothers me, frankly.
I get that. There's a pretentiousness, and it's like a mask that he's wearing, and you can kind of, I don't know what the metaphor is, see the cracks in it, or it just comes off as so phony sometimes. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Not that I don't even know if it's him necessarily. It stems from him, and the fact, you know, that he's this goth visionary artist, right. So of course, everyone who wants to be a goth visionary artist loves him and endlessly sings his praises. Yeah, and the fact that it really got my goat, it's really come up this time, is because, you know, I mentioned this, I think, last week, you know, how the Sandman Prelude is been delayed by 2 months. And Neil Gaiman, I mean, I'll give it to him that he did come out and say, it is entirely my fault. I have not get the work done. But you can't write one comic? One in 2 months? It's the cushiest release schedule. One comic every 2 months. And you can't get one out?
Well, to be fair, he's got a lot of tweets to write.
And he says, oh, I was on tour. I didn't have time.
You know, dude, he's Neil Gaiman. He's going to do it on whatever schedule he wants.
I'm not even.
He doesn't give a fuck about his deadlines anymore. Why should he? He doesn't need the money that this is going to make.
I understand that, but the Sandman is the thing that made him.
Yeah.
It was the first thing.
Of course.
Yes.
So, it was not the first thing he did.
No, but it's the thing that put him on the map.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that, it just feels like he's big enough that it doesn't matter. It's just the little things have added up to me to not like the man as much as I like the art.
Yes.
Which, I mean, his offenses are not nearly as bad as some other people's.
Yeah.
You know, They're non-art. Yeah. Orson Scott Card is an easy target.
Yes.
As of current artists, writers,
truly.
But we can continue to have a discussion as we read more of it. I'm sure.
I'm sure a lot of it will come up. I think that a lot of it is, I mean, it's like a marketing campaign, you know, almost that he started out trying to be something a little bit different, and you can see in reading, like, through a doll's house, how he's kind of shaping this persona, you know, behind the things that he's writing.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. And really, really any big talent like that is, it's, you can't not be a personality like that, you know? I don't know. It's just hard to divorce those two things. Think about, I don't know, Alan Moore certainly comes to mind, and Alan Moore is kind of, he's kind of Gaiman's mentor in that way.
I have no love lost for Alan Moore at this point. I mean, he's an interesting person, and I mean, he's a great writer, but he has gone off the deep end. I mean, it's just divorced from reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just by the position he's put himself in. But it's just, it is this, it is similar.
Yeah. It's just, I'm sure as a dude, like if you could sit down and have a real human conversation with either of them, or really anyone,
yeah,
in any sort of media business like this, they'd probably be pretty okay if they're not, you know, drinking their own Kool-Aid. But, yeah, you know, it's like a big, it's like a mask that he's putting on almost. You know, yeah, he sits, I mean, back and makes his "I'm the king of all writing" face.
Yes. But we'll continue to discuss it as well, as we cover more of the story.
What did you actually think about the books? You've not talked about them too much.
I enjoy them. They're good. I actually had read one of the first one. I actually stopped the first time I read both of these. I'd actually, before we had even read them for the podcast, I had read exactly volume 1 and 2.
Okay.
And that was a year ago at this point, or so, or I don't even know. But it was, I had read exactly what we had read to this point, and it refreshed me about all the stuff I had forgotten. And it's fair, still good, still enjoyable, very clever, good writing. I can see the seeds for the kind of style Gaiman has cultivated over the years. But the book is still finding itself, I can tell, at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, after, you're right, after 1, it kind of sets into a kind of,
yeah,
a kind of mode or pace where, I mean, it's, the storytelling does vary, but you, the thematically, it feels in set.
Yes. It he had clearly figured out a lot of things after that issue was written, and we jumped to book 2. It started to really started to gel.
Yeah, and I did enjoy book 2 more than book 1, where you, it feels like this, it feels, I mean, it, like, I will relate to The Simpsons,
mm-hmm,
where season 1 is, it is a show about Bart.
Yeah.
And then season 2, they go, oh, why, this is a show about Homer. And then the animation is similar, it hits a, you know, a standard, and, you know, they start churning them out. In this, thematically, it's, you know, consistent, and it's the same way. I'm interested in seeing 3 and 4 because you've already said, told me before that those are your favorites.
3 is
not as good.
It's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm interested in seeing.
I think 3 is Dream Country.
Okay.
And it's just sort of a collection of random odds and ends.
Yeah.
4 is one of the most amazing comics that I've ever read.
Okay.
And I'm yeah, it is literally the book, and that's what I'm going to read. Is I'm going to read my copy. It's one of the, I think it's actually the first printing of the paperback, the trade paperback. Torn off, it's beat up so much because it was bought at like a Goodwill.
Yeah.
And I got it signed by Neil Gaiman. So, woohoo.
But yeah, I enjoyed it.
That.
I enjoyed 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to reading the rest of it.
It's a special, special series. Do you want to talk about the art? I think it's important.
Yeah, I liked it, but it's the writing is clearly like center stage in the book.
Yeah, it is almost like when you talk about the writing, and I want to get this out of here because I've been thinking about this. Like when people criticize Gaiman,
yeah,
the stuff that they're criticizing is the stuff, like the worst examples of it, or maybe the best examples, depending on what you're trying to say, are in book 1 in the flowery, almost purple prose that he's writing, you know, and it's just, it's so heavy-handed and corny. It's, I don't know, it's almost painful to read that and think about all the other stuff I'd written by him, and it's, I don't know. It's so awkward by comparison. It's so weird.
It's clearly the worst of gaming, but it's also just art-wise, which is what I was, you know, starting out to say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why Sam Keith was working on this. Like, it blows my mind, but he was sort of was there at the ground floor. I don't know why he was part of this team, but he was.
I don't know. Do you know how many artists off the top of your head, how many went through this entire series? A lot.
A good few. And that was just sort of the way they started doing things. I want to say Dringenberg did a good fair bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there were... It got to a point where he would get like one artist to do an arc, you know, but that was much later in the series. What's her name? Jill Thompson. He mm-hmm. found her at a Comic Con and had her draw a whole arc. And like Craig Thompson? Craig? I always want to say Craig Nelson, but that's the guy from Coach.
It's the guy from Coach.
Or, no, it's P. Craig Russell. That's what it is. And not Craig T. Nelson, who is Coach and or Mr. Incredible.
He is Mr. Incredible. That's true as well.
Well, I'm seeing a lot of people here that have been in Sandman. Bill Sienkiewicz, Jill Thompson,
yeah.
Charles Vess. There's been just a ton of artists, and especially as the series went on, it became kind of the hip thing.
Yeah.
We'll probably, it's kind of sad, but, you know, 10 years from now, we'll probably be saying the same thing about the Adventure Time comic, because it's what the hip thing that all the young cartoonists and illustrators are flocking towards.
Well, I think they've had for the first, at least the first few arcs, they've had the same artists.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how long that's going to last. But.
There's a lot of Dringenberg, I want to say. But he's pretty solid, but there's just a lot about the way that these early Sandman books were handled, particularly the color. The color is horrible, and it ruins so much of this artwork. I feel like a really good black and white reproduction of the inks mm-hmm. might actually look pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But the color just ruins everything. Like, if you look at... Like, I'm looking at the last issue, The Sound of Her Wings, and the part where, like, Morpheus's hair is colored in. And how, like, his hair is just like a big blob of blue with black ink going on it.
Yeah.
It's, like, so... So poorly done... And poorly thought out. Like, the whole second page of that book is some of the worst. Like, it's just so bad. It takes good looking art and ruins it. And this is why I want to say that this is one of those books where they really were, it was an afterthought. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It was just sort of slapped on there. Either that or this is just the look of the time. I don't know. This was the 90s, right? I was going to say it's the 90s. When did this come out? It was the late 80s. Wow. Looks like 88, 89.
Mm-hmm.
So the trade was 91. Okay. I certainly think of it more of a 90s comic, though.
Well, I mean, most of it took place in the 90s, so...
Yeah, the bulk of the series, but these first two books were late 80s comics. But God. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of these pages. Like, even Sam Keith's stuff. Like, the Hell...
Mm-hmm.
...arc. Like, the drawing... and the inking, some of it's pretty damned good. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the color, which is supposed to make it feel like more atmospheric and richer, makes it feel flatter. and more empty.
Yeah.
Like, there's this whole two-page spread of all the demons in hell.
Yeah, I was just looking at it.
I think this is a really good example that one of the biggest, most obvious parts of this two-page spread here is how incredibly empty that sky is.
Yeah.
And it makes it look unfinished and not very well thought out. And I don't blame Keith for that. I think you need some place for your eye to rest in this drawing. Like, if he had filled all of that up with crap, it might have just looked stupid. You know, I don't think it was laziness or anything.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the rest of the art is incredibly detailed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's so many places in this issue in particular. God, it's just... the color just ruins it. It's so grotesque.
Yeah, why would you make the background gray?
Yeah. Yeah. They were just coloring with no thought of hardly anything. It's almost just someone without an eye for color or really too much thought. Or just someone with a terrible eye for color.
I think it really speaks to how our perspective, or how even artists' perspective on books have changed. Mm-hmm. If they were doing this book, like starting a Sandman, Sandman right now, they would, someone, whoever is doing the colors, would, they'd have a cohesive vision.
Yes.
About how this book should look, like Pretty Deadly, mm-hmm. or Saga, like books like that.
Yeah.
Like books that are by big creators that have a lot of art. They're hyped up, and all the artists involved are all on the same page about how the book's going to look. Mm-hmm. You're going to use this type of color palette and stuff like that. And this, like,
Even that, one of the things that this book is just completely lacking. Like, if you look at the page where Chironzon, whatever his friggin' name is, Chironzon, I don't have a clue. You know who I mean? The demon?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where he's talking into the microphone.
Yeah.
And Morpheus is sitting at the goofy Hellfire Club thing. That should be a much nicer looking page than it is. Like, all the elements in it, but it's just the way that it's colored. It takes something that the colorist should have put more order into and made it more chaotic and made it almost impossible to read. That was really my biggest turn off.
Mm-hmm.
When I started reading The Sandman, is that I hated the art. I almost just could not read it. I hated it so much.
I certainly don't mind it, but it's certainly not the focus of the book.
No, it's...
it is a vehicle for the writing, at least at this point.
It certainly is. But I think that, I don't know, it's a little... I don't even know how I can explain it. It's a little... To read a comic that's got poor art but good writing is a little too drum circle-y for me. I don't know. Maybe that's not the perfect metaphor.
No. But
something about it bothers me.
I think a lot of it is... Neil Gaiman's still learning just comics in general.
Yeah. There were a lot of... There were a lot of advancements over the course of The Sandman as well. I mean, the period from when it starts here in the late 80s to when it ends, which I have no idea when that is. You know, I imagine it's the mid-late 90s. I don't know. I'm shot in the dark here. But the print technology was changing so much that the first books looked like just crispy crap, when like one of the last books is drawn mostly, if not entirely, by Michael Zulli, and they don't even ink it. They just do pencils and then Photoshop color on top. And they couldn't have even dreamed of doing that in these original publications.
96. So when the last stories were coming out.
I think that's pretty impressive. I just think that's pretty impressive to see that, you know, across. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like going through the history of comic book printing. You know, just reading through the Sandman.
Well,
that's a whole layer of it for me that I get to enjoy as a, you know, comic nerd and printer.
Yeah, well, we can kind of check in at every single stop and see how the differences are. But I'm excited to see how it goes and see go through the journey.
It was really good to read, particularly A Doll's House again. And I enjoyed Preludes and Nocturnes much more than I thought I would. It's good to see Hob again. His story's really great. The Nada story.
Yeah.
I really liked. I liked the Glass Heart in the beginning story and how that is... it's a
revisited.
The motif is revisited in the end, and even with Desire's sigil, it's pretty interesting that way.
Yeah, I know that I already know that we're going to be seeing a lot of things come back around as we go along.
It's very true. He plants a lot of seeds. I mean, did you catch where Rose said that her best friend was the lesbian?
Yes, I saw that, yeah. That
died in the...
The diner,
yeah. Which, that's a detail I always forget. There's an issue later on where you see her lover and she's in a new relationship. It's interesting where these characters pop up. You know, it's pretty fascinating. I forget how much I love these books.
Yeah. I think we can bring this week's discussion to a close.
I'd say that's a good place to end it.
And then we can bring it back up. We'll be doing Sandman 3, Volume 3 and 4 next week for Nerd Book Club. So you guys can read along with us. We are going to end this week with a segment called Richmond Reads the Crow.
I'm all a tingle with excitement.
Yes, and this comes from when we read The Crow... Eric had made the joke that Richmond from the IT Crowd, he's a kind of a caricature of a goth. I noticed that the Crow and him share some similarities, and maybe Crow sounds like Richmond. And I can do a pretty good Richmond voice. So I read some passages. I've done it a couple times now. Eric's going to join me for this one.
I'm excited.
He's going to do the voice of Fun Boy, who's the junky gangster, I guess, if you want to call him that. And he'll be playing Fun Boy. I'll be reading The Crow as the voice of Richmond from the IT Crowd. Are you ready, Eric?
I'm nervous.
So we will begin.
Sit, please. I promised you a painless death. It is time.
Wouldn't do no good for me to tell you. T-Bird and them guys, would it?
What do you think?
Listen, I can't say why I done the shit I done. I wish I could say it was sorry, but I ain't. I'm a monster, burning from the inside. Obedience is submission, veiled with gravity. I never let nothing define or limit me.
Fun boy, I cannot give you absolution. In a few moments, your sins will be between God and you. Have you read Milton?
Yeah.
Lethe?
Yeah, I understand.
Here's your morphone.
It's the morphone.
I'm gonna call you on my morphone. Hello? Mr. Crow? Why are you wearing that pretty makeup, boy?
Here's your morphone.
It's still a morphone. What the hell?
Here's your morphine, fun boy. Do it. All of it. Now.
Thank you, ghost man. Perhaps I'll see you in hell.
I think that's enough. We should say.
I think that was the best thing that either one of us has ever done. I'm so proud of both of us. I say we made the right decision.
Morphone.
Morphone. The mighty Morphone Power Rangers. And that, my friends, is what killed Robbie.
So that was Richmond Reads the Crow. Starring me and Eric as the Crow, as Richmond. And Fun Boy as...
Yeah.
Herbert the Pervert, I guess.
Is that his name?
That's his name, yeah.
That's his name, Herbert the Pervert, as Fun Boy. And who better, yeah. Really?
I know, honestly.
Who better?
Who better? That was Richmond Reads the Crow, and with that... That brings us to an end of this episode. I know you're sad to hear it. Yeah, sad to see it go.
I wish that the Crow never ended.
they're rebooting it.
I can't wait.
They're eyeing Norman Reedus, who's Daryl in The Walking Dead. He was also in Boondock Saints.
As yes, yes.
The Crow. But we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us online, handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. You can email us, handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. You can tweet us, the HBC Hour. That's at HBC Hour. You can also find us on Tumblr at handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. And, of course, you can find us on iTunes under Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Search for us, subscribe to us, leave us reviews. Leave us comments, leave us feedback. Any thoughts you have about the episodes, what you like, what you don't like, what you want us to read. Anything. We like to hear it. You can find me online at Mixmaster Cheryl on the Twitter and on the Tumblr. That's MixmasterCereal. Eric, where can they find you and your things online?
Well, you can get all kinds of stuff on the internet.
Really?
Yeah. You could go to Free Will Unlimited and see a bunch of dirty bitches.
You can see my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com. You can see a lot of the things I get up to online at ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, MR Bad Example.
So that was episode 29. Until next time, folks, have a good one.
Rock and roll, y'all.
Read comic books since 1985.
But of course they're all shit, right?
But they're all shitty. Oh yeah.